filled with the Absolute. By an attitude of service, which is the essential part of the living entity. The pure devotee of the Lord knows the art of converting everything into its spiritual existence by this service attitude. So as we can see, and as is explained in the various scriptures, that there are, so to say, two worlds. World in which the spiritual energy or the internal energy of the Lord is ruling, and the world in which the external energy of the material energy of the Lord is ruling. And these two worlds are different. The spiritual world is explained that in spiritual world, everything has three characteristics. Everything is sat, chit, and ananda, which means that in a spiritual world, everything is eternal. There is no fear of something being lost. There is no fear of something being broken. And everything... In other words, you can take shelter of everything because things will not perish in any moment. Then the other thing is chit. Everything is full of knowledge. And the third thing is ananda. Everything is full of bliss. So this bliss and this nature of the spiritual world is something that, whether we want to admit it or not, everyone is seeking for, because it... In these circumstances, one can be happy. If everything is full of knowledge and everything is eternal, nothing perishes, then you can be happy. But the atmosphere of the material world is that it is asat. Everything in it is temporary. Everything has a beginning and an end. And no matter what we do, it's just a matter of time when any kind of material activity will end and thus bring us misery. Not only that it will bring us misery when it ends, but if we're even a little conscious, we know that it will end, so it brings us misery even while it's lasting. So everything is asat, nothing is permanent. That means that we cannot really take shelter of anything. And then everything is achit, which means that ignorance is the pervading principle. If you neglect anything, if you don't make sure that you take care of things, then naturally they fall back into ignorant state. In other words, like one of the reasons why we practice things is because while we are in the spirit, in the atmosphere of the material world, we constantly need to endeavor to be above the water. It's not that we can just relax and everything will just be perfectly nice, we will be happy and everything will be spiritual. That is the atmosphere of the spiritual world. But the atmosphere of the material world is that we always have to invest endeavor in order to achieve anything good. So that means that shows that ignorance is kind of a modus operandi of this world, and we have to go against the current if we want to achieve some kind of spiritual, some kind of bliss. And then the third thing about the material world is that it is nirananda. It is deprived of bliss. So the question really is, what do we want? Do we want the material world in which we are somehow or other always baffled? Or do we want the atmosphere of the spiritual world? And and the question is it only that we have to wait until the what Chal Prabhupada calls the dead end of life, that we leave this body and that we have some kind of auspicious transit to the spiritual world? Or is it possible that in this Kali Yuga, today, now, we can somehow or other make that bridge, make that difference, and actually, invoke the energy of the spiritual world while we're here and there and live in it? So this is it seems almost like some kind of utopia. It seems almost impossible because in material world is not exactly giving us, good surprises. But factually, the saints and saints in the Shastras explain that it is very possible. And Srila Prabhupada says that everything that is created by material energy, which means practically everything except the living entities, souls, is created by the living energy, material energy here, can achieve this spiritual existence by the attitude of service. So I was when I was preparing this, I was remembering. I mean, maybe some of you, maybe some of you know this because I've spoken personally with you. But I was remembering the certain things that impressed me on a very profound level when I first time met the devotees. I joined in Belgrade, and devotees. There were, of course, many devotees, and generally devotees in Belgrade considered that that wasn't like some of the peak times of the Belgrade community, or it wasn't something that they didn't consider that something special what was happening. But when I came, I noticed that there were several devotees that were really in bliss, and that were really experiencing something that I've never seen before. And I was doing this and that and practicing yoga and doing all kinds of things. So I've already seen some, like, people who were trying to achieve something beyond just the gross material pleasures. But I've never seen people who had that mood, who had that exuberance of spirit. Like, their eyes were shining and they were so blissful. And I observed them. And the fact was that these people, this group of devotees, I cannot say that all devotees were like that, but one group of devotees, I started coming to the programs, and I noticed that these devotees, they would come earlier and they would organize everything, they would clean, they would set up the chairs and set up the cushions, and some of them would cook, and other of them would prepare the deities for the darshan, because it was like once a week thing, so the deities would be changed on that day. And then as the guests were coming, They were making sure that the people who are supposed to play bhajans are on their seats. They were making sure that as the guests came, the people who were new, that they were introduced, that they don't feel like they just fell off from the sky. And then they sang, they sat and they sang. And then when they sang, I mean, the part of them which sang, some of them were still in the kitchen cooking, then after that, they were the ones who were performing the arati. And they were the ones who were enthusing others to sing and dance. And they were all the time in this mood of giving to the guests, giving to the other devotees, like really investing all their energy. And it wasn't just a mechanical thing. They were really performing all these things with their heart. And at the end, when they would serve prasadam, they would go out in the kitchen before everything was finished, prepare the plates. Then they would come back and serve prasadam to everyone. And then when the prasadam time came, they didn't just sit and collapse, even though they were obviously working for at least 5 or 6 hours in a row. But they would sit and speak to the people who are new. They would explain things to them, or they would sit with devotees. And then when everyone would leave, they would make sure that everyone leaves with a good word. They would come to the people, and kind of they behaved like hosts in Krishna's home. That was really how they saw themselves, and that was really the identity that was transpiring. And then when everyone left, then they stayed, and then they cleaned. And that was the same group of people from the finish until the start. And I noticed that these devotees, I mean, for me personally, devotees were always, since first time I saw devotees, they were very special. I noticed the devotees have something that is extremely special. They had a certain shine in their eyes. They had something about them that was just that was just special. But amongst all devotees which I saw as special, these devotees were really standing out. And it's not that they were standing out just because they were so much present by doing all this service, but you could really feel that they were emanating energy that was beyond anything that I've ever seen. And despite the fact that they were working hard all day, they were the ones who were most blissful. They were the ones who were emanating the most spiritual energy. So that left a strong impression on me. And as I got to know them better and spend more time with them, I really feel myself lucky that I could see these people and learn from them how to serve, how this attitude of serving is actually what brings bliss. And it was kind of such a simple thing when you see others doing. And what what was the effect of their mood is that the atmosphere was so transcendental. Because of their endeavors, they created such an atmosphere that I remember when I saw them, I was thinking, I just want to be part of this. I just want to be like them. Can I please come and do something? And people were feeling like that. People were feeling attracted. No one thought, oh, these slaves, they're slaving out all day, serving us. Everyone felt like these are the best devotees that we know. We just want to spend time with them. We want to become like them. So I could really see this that this mood of service created such a difference. You know, it was like a rented house. Nothing was ideal about the circumstances that were there. But this attitude just changed everything. And also, some devotees, they asked Jayapataka Swami, Maharaj, how is it possible that on festival days everyone is so blissful and everything is so ecstatic, and then tomorrow kind of normal life starts and we go back down to some kind of level that is not so ecstatic? He said, is there something special about the festivals, or what is it happening that we... And Maharaj said, yes, it's true that there is something special about the festivals, but what is the most special about the festivals is that devotees meditate on the services they want to perform for the Lord in advance. Then they come and they're all day engaged in the service in a selfless way. And because they all cooperate together and serve the Lord together in this way, they feel so much ecstasy, and that is what creates that mood. And he said, in one point you will understand that this is something that you should actually start doing every day, and your every day will become like a festival, and the whole atmosphere will change and become a spiritual atmosphere. So one thing is that chanting the holy names of the Lord and just being in presence of the deity of the Lord, having devotees around us, is already could already be enough to arise ecstasy in us. But we should really ask ourselves, is it that we, like Satchananda Swami said once, is it that we're finished with the material nightmare, and that we are every day feeling this spiritual presence and bliss, or is it not? And if it's not, if we still sometimes feel that we're in some sort of nightmare, then we have to reevaluate. Is there something on our part that we're doing wrong? Maybe we're doing too much service. Maybe we are over-absorbed in doing practical things, but we're not giving quality. We're not paying attention to the details. We do so much service, but we offend devotees on the way. Maybe we don't do enough service. Maybe we need to increase in quantity. Maybe we need to increase in quality. But the fact is that if service is properly performed, there is nothing wrong with the process. Then it will be fruitful, and we will feel ecstatic. So. Recently, I had the opportunity in the kitchen. We were cooking, and there was 20 devotees together serving. And in one point, I just stood on the side, and I just looked at the whole thing, and it was just amazing. It was just the energy in that room was bursting out, because everyone was on one point. There is a story how about the heaven and hell, how in... a man came, and I don't know where this story is coming from, but the point is quite clear. A man came and he saw this place, and there were people sitting around the table, and they all had very long spoons, and they were trying to, they could reach the bowl with the food, but because the spoons were too long, they could not put it in their mouth. And everyone on the table was miserable and skinny, and everyone was kind of in hatred. So the man asked, what is this place? And they told him, this is hell. And then he moved on, and he went on to the second place. And in this place, everyone was sitting with exact same spoons, at the exact same table, with exact same bowl, and everyone was fat and happy. So he said, what is this place? And they said, it is heaven. But what he noticed, the difference is that in the first place, in the hell, everyone was trying with these long spoons to put food in their mouth, and just wasn't working because the spoons were too long. Whereas in heaven, people were intelligent enough that they would take and feed the opposite person, and the opposite person would feed them. And in this way, everyone was well-fed and happy. So this story, I like this story because it shows a good point that if we constantly focus on making ourselves happy, we will never be happy. But if we shift our focus, then to pleasing others and to really pleasing Krishna, then we can only be happy. And I would say, I would kind of, my own addition to this story, this was heaven and hell, but the spiritual world means that Krishna is in the center and everyone has become devotees in this story and everything is focused on Krishna. So if we, it's also explained, like I brought here this Brahma Samhita explains that there are different, that as I was saying, the spiritual world in charge is this internal energy, but for the material world, external energy is in charge. And when we shift our consciousness, the mood or the atmosphere of the material world is everything is here for me. If I come into any new situation, whether it's Krishna consciousness or not, I will think, what is in this situation for me? What am I getting from this? Should I do this activity or not? And I will judge whether I should do this activity or not according to what I'm getting from this, what I'm getting as a result or not. And sometimes, even though ideally, our ideal is self or service, but these kind of things creep in. And this is what breaks the spiritual world and when it becomes the material world again. When we start constantly meditating on, you know, what is in this temple for me? What is this temple offering to me? What is Krishna offering to me? When is Krishna going to give me this result, that result? Starting to expect things from Krishna. And this is the mode of the material world. The mode of the spiritual world is one of selflessness. The mode of spiritual world is one of focus on Krishna's interest, in one of pleasing Krishna and pleasing his devotees. So if we want to partake of the spiritual atmosphere, we cannot have the material mentality. It just doesn't work. We have to shift our mentality and see that if we perform service, if we perform selfless service, then we will be happy. Because if we just run after our own happiness, it's like Bhagavatam explains, it's like a mirage in a desert. And you just run and run, and it seems like there's water there. And it's explained at the end, you become so crazy with this run for personal happiness that you take and you start putting this hot sand in your mouth. And this hot sand just makes it worse, you know. Like you haven't really found what you wanted in the material world. But because you already made yourself so much crazy with trying to make yourself happy, you take whatever it's there, you know. And in this way, you make your situation even worse because you become even more implicated. So this is what, this is the great illusion of the Lord. He's in charge of this. But the Lord says, if one surrenders to me, if one serves me, then I will provide. I will carry what you like. Because, like, there's this concern, why we don't focus so much on some kind of self-service is because there is a realistic concern. Well, what will happen to me? You know, I also have to take care of myself. And it's a fact. I'm not trying to say some kind of idealistic thing where we're just utopian, where we just, you know, reject all any kind of self-interest. But the point is that unless you try to serve Krishna and allow Krishna to show you that he will take care of you, how will you ever have faith in the fact that Krishna will take care of you? If you always make every single detail and arrangement to take care of yourself, how will Krishna ever have a chance to show you that, no, I will provide for you, I really do care for you? Like, there's this story how, I think it was Jayadev, but I'm not sure, who was rewriting Bhagavad Gita, and when he came to this verse, how Krishna, for his devotees who are always absorbed in him, how he carries what they lack, he was thinking, well, maybe he provides, but he doesn't really, like, personally come and, you know, take care. So he changed the verse from Vadami to Dadami. Like, I give, I don't exactly come and do it, you know. So then he went for a bath, and when he came back, his wife was eating a meal. And, you know, in traditional Indian society, if a wife starts eating before the husband, it means something is very, very wrong. So he was like, why are you eating a meal? And she said, what kind of person are you? There were these two boys, they came, they gave me all these vegetables and milk, and I invited them to stay, and they said, we will not stay because your husband, he's a very cruel person, so we want to go before he comes back. And then they showed me his back, and on the back there were scratches. And he said that... and they said you did, that her husband did this. So she told her husband, what kind of person are you? How can you treat like these little boys? So coming back to his room, he was thinking what happened, and he just saw how he scratched that word and wrote how Krishna actually doesn't, and he saw, oh my God, Krishna actually comes and really gives the, really takes care of the devotee. It's not just theoretical. And also we have many examples in the, there's examples in the Bhagavatam of a fruit seller woman who came and Krishna was still in his Balya Lila, he was a child, and the woman came and she was selling seasonal fruits. So Krishna saw that his parents, they would trade grains for the fruits. So he ran out and, you know, a small palm of a kid, and, you know, he's running, everything falls out. Like, by the time he came to the woman, it was like two grains. And he was saying, can I buy the fruits with this? Can I buy some fruits, you know? And the woman was so charmed by Krishna, and she said, yes, you can have every fruit that you have. And she filled his hands. And when by the time Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj are coming, and the fruit seller woman looks, and her basket, which was full of fruits, were now full of jewels. So we should understand these stories, it's not just some kind of fairy tale. These stories are there to show us how Krishna works. There is kubja, there is, like, for example, in Mathura, what happened is that person who was Shishirada Gopinath Ki Jai. Person who was, there were two people that were selling Krishna's clothes. They were preparing silken robes for Kamsa. And Krishna and Balaram came and they wanted those robes and they did not want to give them. And in this way they served to their, basically death. And then after a little bit, Krishna came and he saw Kubja, and Kubja was preparing sandalwood paste for Kamsa. And Krishna and Balaram came and they asked, could you give us some sandalwood paste so we could decorate our bodies? And Kubja immediately gave them. And Krishna, after that, Krishna took care of Kubja's needs. Kubja was a hunchbacked woman. Krishna stepped on her, made her straight, and Krishna fulfilled her desires. And so these kind of examples show us, also Draupadi, when Krishna once cut himself, like Draupadi was serving fruits to Krishna. So she brought this fresh fruit, because this kind of fruit that she was offering, usually when you offer something to Krishna, you prepare it on a plate, you cut it already, you bring it. But there's this kind of fruit which, if you cut it, it changes color, it becomes bitter. So she would bring this fruit and she brought a knife, so Krishna can cut it. So Krishna took the fruit and you have to eat it fresh cut. So he started cutting and he cut his finger. And she immediately, it was a spontaneous reaction, she immediately ripped a part of her sari and gave Krishna so he can make a bandage. And Krishna looked at her and said, in the future I will help you, I will reciprocate with you. And the point is that that later on, when she was in the greatest danger of her life, in the greatest calamity, when she was supposed to be disrobed in front of the whole assembly of men, which was much worse than that, Krishna provided an unlimited sari for her, and that was his reciprocation. Krishna reciprocated, in other words, much more like in unimaginable way. It's not that Krishna is counting and says, okay, you give me one apple, I bring you back one apple. Because Krishna actually, he doesn't need anything. The point, what he takes, is the mood of our service. So we should not also fall in the trap to count our service only by hours or by some kind of results. Results can be tricky and we should not be attached to them, because if we are attached to the results of our service, our connection with the spiritual world, our connection with happiness will be also damaged, because the results in this material world are always tricky and one should not be attached to them, but one should be attached to the service. You have the right to perform your duty. So one should be, and it's explained that in Bhagavatam, that this is the supreme dharma for all humanity. Only by performing service, the actual soul can be satisfied. And I definitely saw that when I met these devotees. I was so much, my heart was so much attracted to them. And he says that this service, it has to be selfless and has to be continuous. So like Prabhupada said so many times, like, use your intelligence, plan the day in such a way, plan your life in such a way that you can be constantly engaged in the service of Krishna. So that brings us to the question of how can we serve Krishna? What can we give to Krishna? Instead of always thinking, take, 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 how can we give to Krishna? How can we give to Krishna's devotees? And Prabhupada many times said that you can give your time. One thing you can give is your time. The other thing you can give is your energy. That means performing things, and also giving energy also means giving some, you know, donation, Lakshmi, or whatever you have, some of your, renouncing some of the opulences, doing some yagya. Then one can give one's mind by being absorbed in the thoughts of Krishna. This is all also service. Also one can give one's intelligence by trying to perform the service with intelligence. We should not perform services whimsically, and really if you see that person, like if you see that someone, if you really want to please something, someone, you don't just, you know, how to say, rattle it off. You don't just do it half-heartedly. No, you make sure that every detail is correct. You meditate on things. So if we really absorb this mood, then everything will change in our life. We will become a resident of the spiritual world because Krishna will be pleased with us. And if Krishna is pleased with us, no matter what happens externally, we will be happy. It doesn't matter because he's the one who feeds the soul. So just a few last points that Krishna, the challenge, there is a challenge in performing service, and that is that it's not that easy. It seems like some kind of ideal thing, but we see in practical everyday life that if we try to perform some service, often we run into obstacles or we run into conflicts with other devotees. And that is where the place of humility really kicks in. Because Krishna says that in the Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book in the last part how one's greatness, one's advancement will be checked or will be assessed by one's ability to tolerate provoking situations. So while doing our service, we will constantly be in these kind of situations where our ego will be on the line. And if we are able to somehow or other be grateful to Krishna for giving us these opportunities to learn and can humbly continue with our service, then we will actually become advanced just by persevering in this and taking a humble attitude. So we see that just like Lord Chaitanya said, Trinadapi Sunichin, or being more tolerant of the trees, it's essential to chant the holy name in the proper mood. So in the same way, it's not just the holy name. A holy name includes everything, because anything that we do during the day, anything that we think about will reflect in our chanting. So it means that every service that we do, we also should aspire to become a humble servant, because only a humble servant can really be grateful, can really appreciate the opportunity of service, and instead of trying to bring God, okay, you come and you show yourself to me, no, you please God and he will take care of you. I wanted to read to you a little bit about what kind of person is Krishna that we are trying to serve. And really, by giving our time to Krishna, we will immediately... Krishna does not have a problem how to reciprocate. He has all the ways, all the means, and all the intelligence to in every way satisfy us. So we really, if we try for that connection, if we focus on Krishna's happiness, because happiness is in reciprocation. Happiness is not something that is a stagnant thing. That means we experience some happiness in reciprocation with the living entities of this world, but problem is that this world is temporary. But if we want eternal happiness, if we want real bliss that comes from the spiritual world, then Krishna is the person to whom and through whom we should see this world. And if we see everyone as a devotee of Krishna or just a soul who is connected to Krishna and ourselves as servants, then everything will transform. And instead of us being instead of Durga or material energy being in charge of us, the spiritual energy will take charge of us even while we're in this world. So here Srila Prabhupada explains two things. How Krishna, he's not attached to any kind of work. He doesn't want our results. And then he says something about who Krishna is. So he says, when Krishna comes to this earth, he's not like us. He's totally transcendental. We desire the fruits of our activities, but Krishna does not desire any fruits, nor are there any reactions to his actions, nor does he have any desire for fruitive activity. When we enter into business, we hope for profit, and with that profit we hope to buy things that will make our life enjoyable. Whenever conditioned souls do something, there is a desire for enjoyment behind it. But Krishna has nothing to desire. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is full with everything. When Krishna came to this earth, he had many girlfriends and over 16,000 wives. And some people think that he was very sensual, but this was not the fact. We must understand the meaning of relationships with Krishna. In this material world, we have many relationships as father, mother, wife, or husband. Whatever relationship we find here is but a perverted reflection of the relationship we have with the Supreme Lord. Whatever we find in this material world is born of the Absolute Truth, but here it is pervertedly reflected in time. Whatever relationship we have with Krishna goes on. If we have a relationship in friendship, that friendship is eternal and continues from life to life. In the material world, a friendship exists for a few years and then breaks. Therefore, it is called perverted, temporary, or unreal. If we make our friendship with Krishna, it will never break. If we make Krishna our master, we will never be cheated. If we love Krishna as our son, he will never die. If we love Krishna as our lover, he will be the best of all and there will be no separation. Because Krishna is the Supreme Lord, he is unlimited and has an unlimited number of devotees. Some are trying to love him as a lover or husband, and therefore Krishna accepts this role. In whatever way we approach Krishna, he will accept us, as he states in the Bhagavad Gita. Yeyatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham mama vartmanu vartate manushya partha sarvasha. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. So, I think I'll stop here. I had different little points there, but it seems like this is a nice end about who we're there to serve. So if there are any questions... She was a society girl already. Hi, well. Yes, but she was still a society girl. At least to my knowledge, as far as I remember, she was already. She might have been more successful. I tell it in another way because I kind of a little bit convoluted it, so it's understandable why. It was like this. Jayadev read these words that I just read, how I carry what. So he was thinking, it's not that Krishna really personally comes and, you know, like takes care of you and so on. It's more like he sends through some agent to make sure that you get it. But so he crossed this word in a book. And he wrote underneath, he thought it was a mistake, and he wrote underneath a different word which meant like, you know, I don't personally do it, but you know. So then he left to take a bath while his wife was preparing lunch. So while she was preparing lunch, there were these two beautiful boys that came, and one was blackish and the other one was whitish, and it was Krishna and Balaram. So they came, and they, of course, didn't present themselves as Krishna and Balaram, but they just came as simple boys, and they had full bags of fruits and vegetables and all kind of foodstuffs. And they gave to her, and she said, "What is this? Where are you coming from? And please then come, wait, I'm cooking, wait, and then I can serve you lunch." So then they said, no, we cannot wait. We're too much afraid of your husband. He's a very cruel person. We have to go." And they left. So she was thinking, she said, "But how is it that he's such a cruel person?" And then the boys turned their backs, and she saw that on the bags they had scratches, and that was the blackish boy. And the blackish boy said, "He did this to me, you know. And that's why we're so afraid, so we're going now." So then they left. So she was so angry with her husband that she, lunch which he was cooking for him, she just sat and she started eating, you know. So he's coming home, and this never happens in traditional society. First, you know, there's an order how things happen. First the man eats, then the woman, so on. So he's coming, and he sees her eating, and he's like, "What's happening here? So why are you eating?" So then she says, "You're a very cruel person. These boys came, and they show me their back, and you scratch them, and what is this?" So he came into his room, and he saw book was still opened where he left it, and he saw this scratch world, and he understood, "Oh, I actually hurt Krishna. I tried to change the Gita, and Gita is the body of Krishna, and I tried to change his words. I didn't believe. So in this way, I hurt Krishna," and he proved that he really cares, he really personally takes care, because he personally came and brought all these foodstuffs, you know. So this was how Jayadev had this, the lamp came on. He understood, "Oh no, Krishna really takes care." And yeah. Yes, you can correct me. Okay, Jay. I wasn't sure. Scratch. Thank you. And she was just preparing sandalwood. Thank you very much. Yes. was kind of waiting that someone will notice that. Because that was so... Well, there is a separation, but there is no real separation. Because if you're always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, his transcendental thoughts of Krishna are none, then you're always with Krishna, either through separation or through union, but there is no real separation in that sense. The real separation is we are in the material world and we have forgotten about Krishna. We couldn't care less about him. We don't know who he is. And we don't serve him in any way. But if we serve him and we're constantly thinking about him, whether he's right next to us, or this separation is transcendental. Therefore, it is not the same thing as separation that Srila Prabhupada is speaking about, where the current of samsara brings two souls together and takes them apart and pass nothing. There is nothing permanent staying there. But with Krishna, there is no separation in the sense that Prabhupada says that once one establishes, this is in one purport of Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says once one establishes a relationship with Krishna in a particular mood, then it will never be broken even after annihilation of the material world. It will never, it just stays permanently like that. So in that sense, there is no separation. But in exchange with Krishna, different service have personal association in different capacities, and the principle of having, say, a rhythm of separation and union increases the rasa. So that's why, but it is different, that separation is different than separation from Krishna in a sense of Krishna's absence in one life, that Krishna, you know, Krishna dies tomorrow, Krishna's not going to die tomorrow, like that. So that, like that, there is no separation. Summarize the class. Well, the point is that if we selflessly serve and we cooperate together in that and focus on Krishna, we see that we're doing this for Krishna. Service means that you focus on the object of you want to please someone. Then the atmosphere that will be created, even without us trying to do so, will be the atmosphere of the spiritual world and everyone will be blissful. But if we focus on our own self-interest and constantly look at the world through these glasses or what's in this for me, then everyone will be miserable and there will be so much trouble because all the trouble in this world comes due to egoistic interest and due to lack of Krishna consciousness. So if we are Krishna consciousness and in the mood of giving, then there will be heaven on earth. Of course, that will never happen because this is a material world, but we can at least create the, what Srila Prabhupada wants, and that is the embassy of the spiritual world. Maybe not the whole planet can be transformed, but maybe there can be example in Radesh, in this temple, that people come and they see that people are here actually living in the spiritual world, which I'm not saying they're not, but I'm just saying that the more we are in this mood, the more this atmosphere will be present, and then everyone will be happy. Hare Krishna. Well, I think, I mean, Prabhupada says that everything is up to the attitude of the follower in the preface too. So attitude is really everything because Krishna is Bhavagrahi. He doesn't take the result, he takes the mood in which it is offered. But I'm not sure if I would agree with you on the fact that service performed in passion or ignorance is necessarily selfish or motivated, and servicing goodness is not. I think that selfless service can be performed in all the three modes, and selfish service can be performed in all the three modes, because you come to self-realized soul, you learn about the process, you may be in any of the three modes predominantly, and you may, out from your situation, try to serve Krishna, but due to ignorance that you have, you don't know how to serve, but your mood can be selfless. In other words, you have this really desire to cook for Krishna, but you come, you burn everything, you cut yourself, you offend other devotees, but your intention may be pure. So that doesn't mean that just because you're in a mode of ignorance, you're necessarily motivated. I mean, I wouldn't equate it necessarily. Even though, obviously, the mode of goodness is more elevated, so it's more likely that as one progresses to the mode of goodness, there will be some purification of the heart as well, and so on. But I don't think that it's necessarily that it's like that. But the motivation is really the key. But the other thing is that if one is really sincere, and keeps, we cannot say we're pure, we don't have material desires, we don't have motivations. But I can take my motivations, put them on a shelf, and come and serve Krishna. That doesn't mean that I want to kill my motivations, or I want to pretend that they are not there, or I'm pretending that, I'm a pure devotee or something like that. But no, okay, I come and I cook for Krishna, I focus on Krishna. The fact that I have material desires, but then when I come back, those material desires may not be there anymore, because Krishna will take care of that as well. So I'm kind of a little bit suggesting this, that we cannot pretend that things are not there, but if we somehow or other try to focus on Krishna, then Krishna will take care of everything. Not only that he will give us things, but he will also take the bad things away. You know, he will purify us. So maybe we cannot serve purely all the time. But I think having this idea and having sensed that mood really makes a big difference. So I think that we could try to serve purely from any mode. But also, like, if we do that, if we sincerely serve, then the time will show, because we can say we're sincere, but, like, 10 years have passed, what's the result in your heart? Like, how much have the mud been removed? If it's not removed, then something must be not there. Like Prabhupada said to one who was saying that some of Prabhupada's disciples heard Prabhupada asking one of his disciples, how long have you been here? And he said, how long have you been practicing? And he said something like 7 years. And Prabhupada looked at him and he was very grave and he said, by this time you could have been like a pure devotee, but you're not serious enough. So it's, like if over time the result is not exactly, then okay, no problem, but reevaluate, see, well, maybe I should be more conscious, maybe I should do this and that. Okay, last one. Yes, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, thank you. Become complacent. I'm not sure that we're that much in danger of being stuck in the mode of goodness, but definitely complacency is there. And I forgot about that part of the question, what you were... Thank you for answering that, because I forgot. That's... Yeah. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.